Same old man. Here's
Johnny. You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this podcast episode review for May 6th, 2023. I am Brendan Cassidy.
And I'm Ryan McQuaid.
Thanks for joining us this week, everyone, for this review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Ryan, you're my guardian. I'll just say that right now.
And you're my rocket raccoon.
I like that better, actually. That one's pretty good. I'll take a lot of pride in that.
We are In Session Film?
We are. We are In Session Film. We are. We're rocketing In Session.
I am In Session.
For those of you listening, for a little inside baseball, Ryan, we're recording this a bit earlier in the morning than we usually do, so you might get our bassy voices for this.
You might get the sexy low voice from the Midnight Express.
Yeah, maybe not quite as sexy as Bradley Cooper's voice as Rocket Raccoon, but we'll...
That knocks your socks off? All right.
Yeah, I mean,
Learned a lot about Brendan this morning.
It's one description. It certainly has a lot of emotionality to it. We'll talk about that.
Nice.
But yeah, thanks for being here, Ryan. I'm looking forward to talking about this new movie here, this new Marvel movie, which has been getting a lot of buzz from a lot of our friends and fellow critics out there. Some mixed responses overall, but a lot of people seem to be really... batting 1,000 for this one, and I'm looking forward to getting into what we have to say about that. As we gear into this, I think maybe the first thing we should do, Ryan, is talk about our feelings with regard to James Gunn, maybe how we felt about his relationship with Marvel, because there were a lot of circumstances leading into the making of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And for a little context, there was a point in... what year was that? Maybe 2018 or something, where he was fired from the production before the cast themselves bat for him. And he was brought back. Of course, there was also a pandemic to contend with. There's also James Gunn's newly found history with DC Studios. Of course, we know all about that. All around making Guardians Volume 3 when he was brought back. So there were a lot of circumstances. So I guess what thoughts do you have on that? And even just around James Gunn in general as a filmmaker, because he's one of the few filmmakers in the MCU that I feel like has made movies that really feel distinctly his own, at least when compared to the Marvel machine.
Yeah, I think that James Gunn is the best filmmaker that the MCU's ever had.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I think that at least within their own universe. Now, they've had 32 movies. I mean, he's no John Watts, actually, to be fair. Because, we all know John Watts as this auteur.
John Watts is an auteur, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's really, the Scorsese of our time. And
and to be fair, I like two of those Spider-Man movies that he did.
Yeah,
I really like No Way Home. I think it's a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, they're good movies. I mean, like, cinematically speaking and visually speaking, an eyesore. But,
not the greatest, but I don't know if I go that far.
I mean, like, they don't look great. Like, there's not like a shot I take out of those movies and I'm like, oh, that's the director right there.
At the very least, they're not as colorful as the Guardians of the Galaxy film.
I'm being too mean on him because the real star of the visual lens is Peyton Reed. it's just I mean, right?
Now, and I'm like, someone that kind of went to bat for Quantumania. I didn't hate that movie.
I know. I'm totally kidding aside. And that's the point.
Yeah.
The point of that is to say that when you see a director that has a vision, like a Coogler, even Waititi, even
I'd say Taika, Chloe Zhao,
for sure.
For better or for worse for many, many people, but that was very much her vision in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think then, even Branagh's Shakespearean
sensitivities. I love that first Thor.
Kind of lend into the first Thor and building that world out,
Joe Johnston and the first
Joe Johnston,
America.
Yeah.
Redoing The Rocketeer.
Yeah, I mean, like... if you know the directors behind their work, it lends to, I think, a better theatrical experience rather than just hiring some random AI generated name. Peyton Reed, John Watts, you know, Joe Russo.
I don't want to use the words AI on this podcast anymore. I feel like the AI might be listening.
Well, I mean, you know, the Russo brothers are totally for it. It seems like that's how the gray man was invented. But that's beside the point.
That's how Ghosted was made, too.
Oh, God. Thank God we never have to talk about that. That was such a bad movie. Oh, my God. Anyway, poor Dexter Fletcher. All right. But James Gunn. Yeah, I think he's the best of the best. That being said, I don't think he's batting 1,000 for me as a director. Like, you know, his last movie, The Suicide Squad. I did not like that movie.
You know, I did not either. I'm with you on that.
I think that movie was really not within his wheelhouse, if that makes sense. And I thought that I think the thing about James Gunn is he's very hit or miss because of his sense of humor. I think his sense of humor can either be really, really good for some things. And then for other things, you're like, I don't need to see you do essentially with the Suicide Squad, this movie, you know, the Guardians all over again. Like, it just felt like he was retreading himself. And it is a little worrisome, I think, for him taking over DC. I think that you can have a little bit of worry. I don't think it's 100% I'm bought into this idea, but I think he's
right.
I think story-wise, storytelling-wise, and in just from a visionary standpoint, I think he's actually what DC needs, because he knows from Marvel how to craft a continuous story. He knows the importance of story. He knows importance of characters, and he's got a lot of love for these characters. He's a superhero guy. He knows what he's doing, and he's very reliable. So I can understand why, you know, Zaslav and those people over at DC just gave him, you know, the guidance to, because, you know, otherwise it's Zack Snyder and a bunch of poisonous fans. And, you know, we don't need that right now. So, and, you know, you are right, Brendan. I mean, he had that, you know, it's kind of hard to remember because we've had a pandemic and so many things.
What has happened?
Endgame and all this other stuff. And then, you know, six other MCUs, eight other movies. You know, it's been a while since we've had a Guardians film, but B, we've talked about the fact that James Gunn was fired for some insensitive tweets that were bad jokes, really bad jokes. Talk about that humor not working, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I thought about that.
And I think that, you know, honestly, I don't even remember them. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe you have them more fresh on your mind because you know.
I don't know. I remember the basic gist of it, which is how I introduced it, basically.
Yeah. And so I was kind of like, these are tweets from years ago. And sometimes, and knowing him, it's kind of like that thing about comedy, right? Where it's but it's also the other thing about comedy is okay, well, you don't have to say it. You know what I mean? You don't have to tweet it. You know what I mean? And also scrub your goddamn account. You know what I mean? How about that? But that being said, the Guardians team really stood for him. It's really interesting that James Gunn got essentially fired immediately from Marvel. And there's been no response from them about a certain Kang the Conqueror. So that's a little bit interesting. But that being said, he came back and honestly, Brendan, to get into this movie, real quick, and then I'll get it over to you.
Yeah.
I think this movie was surprisingly, kind of emotional for me. I connected with it weirdly enough.
Okay.
Now you could say it's a little bit of manipulation, 'cause if you put a bunch of CGI cute adorable characters.
Well, I have thoughts on that. Yeah, you know, I have thoughts.
I know you have thoughts on it. I've already seen your letterbox.
Oh, you have. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this will be a fun conversation.
And everything, and I think we can talk about that. I think that there's a lot going on in this movie, honestly, to be fair. This is a 2.5-hour film. It feels like a little bit at times, but also you're having some sort of finality here for Gunn. You know, he's the guy that's really introduced the weird into the MCU. So he gets to have, I think, carte blanche and a launching point to do whatever he wants. And I am actually surprised. And go back to what I was saying is that, you know, this movie is very dark. This movie is the darkest entry in the Guardians trilogy. Might be right up there with, I think, like the first hour of Endgame as the darkest stuff we've had in the MCU. Like, it's some really dour scenes and also very traumatizing scenes that we'll talk about with Rocket and his backstory and those characters. But ultimately, very emotional. Could be manipulative, like I said, because of those animals. But I think ultimately very rewarding. I think that Gunn's kind of going out guns a-blazing here. And I think that
he's outgunning it. Is that what you're saying?
He's outgunning himself. You know what I mean? And I think that that's kind of what I've been missing from these MCU movies since Endgame. A sense of emotionality and tenderness and deeply layered kind of storytelling. Like, I think that if you watch this movie and you go back and watch the other Guardians movies, it really thematically all works, especially Rocket's story, the sort of small scenes that we've had in the first and second one, really, that I've been watching through clips and research for this, but then also online, they're all connecting back, and that Gunn really has wanted to tell this story for a long, long time. So there is some messiness because of Endgame and especially Infinity War that he has to kind of mine through in order to get the Guardians exactly where they are by the end of this movie. But ultimately, I think that this is one of the better films in the MCU since post Endgame. I think it's it's up there with Shang-Chi as the best. Shang-Chi and No Way Home. I think I joke about John Watts, our future Best Director winner. But
it's probably going to happen someday.
It's probably going to happen, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. He's got a lot of connections. Oscars are with ABC. It's an inside job.
Yep.
But anyway, no, I think that those two movies, they blend on the sentimental by the end and the familiar and the emotional points, especially with Shang-Chi and his family and Peter and with Aunt May and everything, you know, kind of with that, what's built up within that quote unquote trilogy, which, by the way, for everyone out there, these aren't trilogies.
There has never been a trilogy in the MCU. That is my, I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but
no, I agree with you.
Yeah. I agree with you. I will say, to your point, the Guardians films are the closest that we've gotten to having a standalone trilogy within the MCU, because they at least have a sense of finality between the three of them on their own, but no other set of three films have that in the MCU.
And honestly, if you just watch the three Guardians films, you really don't need to watch.
They kind of
can get away with it.
Like, yeah. You know, I mean, of course, there's the holiday special, which came out before this, which does have some plot threads that bleed into volume three. And of course, you talked about Endgame. There are things that happen in both Infinity War and Endgame that are absolutely needed here. So,
knowing James Gunn's comments this past week or 2 weeks ago or whatever in the press run, he did not like what they did, especially to Gamora.
You could tell his back was against the wall trying to make that work in this movie.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, you can tell, like, because of that grand story, he has to, like, backtrack. And I don't think that he would have liked to have had either Gamora die or the fact that, like, they then bring her back and sort of cheat code that and then have to do it's a lot. Like, I mean, the fact that the MCU has had to deal with a lot of, like, the things that those two movies have kind of endured, the blip and obviously various other things, and have chosen not to do other things. Like, I is that monster from Eternals still hanging out in the sky or whatever?
You know, I hope, like, so.
I kind of hope that's what
I just want to see that, like, be a random post credit scene someday. And then there's some plane drives by, like, what the heck is this?
Yeah, I kind of want a shot from space, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, that thing's just like,
and it's so big, like, all of a sudden Earth has a whole new shape to it.
I want that. It's like, come on. Like, I think, like, at this point, like,
we can call it Eternal Earth or something. Yeah, like, there's a counter Earth in this movie. Let's call it Eternal Earth.
It's really, I mean, what are they doing? Anyway,
it's funny.
That being said, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, I cannot lie. It got me. I did cry in this movie a couple of times, not just once, a couple of times. I think that it is because of this is Brendan, the last bit of original Coke recipe MCU that we are going to be having for a long, long time. I think everything else is new Coke. And if you know history, new Coke was not really that successful. And then what happened? It had to go back to calling it Coke. Meaning, yeah. I think we're going to be going back to Iron Man and Captain America in this multiverse stuff. I think that they're going to pay like $100 million to Chris Pratt and Robert Downey Jr. But that's beside the point.
That's beside the point. I don't want to. Yeah, I feel like we can have a 5-hour conversation just speculating. Maybe we'll do that on episode 533 as we talk about our
rankings. Maybe we will.
Maybe we'll have some speculation for phase 5 into phase 6 and what we think might happen. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that'll happen. You know, it's pretty interesting with regard to James Gunn. If you look at his filmography, doesn't it seem like each film he makes is kind of a representation of what his mood is or what his feelings are? Because The Suicide Squad is a gratuitously mean and angry movie. And it kind of makes sense that it was made at that time after being fired from Guardians and then being brought back. So
I'm going to kill everything you love.
Yeah. So there is such a level of frustration to that movie. I'm with you. The Suicide Squad, I don't think really is all that great. I think it gets lost.
It's got good parts, but like overall, like,
I don't even know if it has great parts for me. I think it has a great cast and some decent performances.
That's what I mean. Cena's really good, and who's the girl with the rats?
You
know what I'm talking about?
I know you're talking about.
And that's how I know how much about the Suicide Squad. The girl with the rats.
Sounds terrible to say.
I'll look it up.
Let's give credit where credit is due because she was actually pretty good in that movie. It's interesting because I do feel like James Gunn's films are a reflection of his psychology in the moment. And I mean, it's a matter of taste, I guess. I tend to prefer James Gunn when he's operating with more sincerity, when he actually seems like he's in a good mood, for lack of a better term, which is why I really enjoy the first two Guardians films. Volume 2, I didn't love when I first saw, but it has now become one of my top three favorite MCU movies, and admittedly, it is my favorite film that James Gunn has ever made, Guardians Volume 2.
It rules.
It's great. It's great. I have a soft spot for Slither. I think that movie's a lot of fun.
That's good.
I need to rewatch Super, but Super was kind of one of those movies that I feel similarly to The Suicide Squad, just less so. It has a meanness to it that I think works more in that movie than The Suicide Squad does, but there is still an ugliness to that movie that I can't always stomach, which might be the point, so maybe the film is actually working fairly well. But yeah, it's interesting that I feel like his feelings, his headspace is what bleeds into whatever film he's making at the moment. And I feel like that could be the same thing with Guardians Volume 3. And I do want to preface once again by saying that Volume 2 I did not love when I first saw. That's a movie that went way over my head. And I've learned to love it a lot since then. So I say that to say, maybe the same thing will happen with me regarding Guardians Volume 3. It could be a grower for me. I do like this movie. It sounds like I'm not as high in it as you are or as most other people seem to be. I was moved by a lot of aspects at the end that I do want to talk about. And what I do love most about this movie, especially when compared to what most of Phase 4 was doing, and of Phase 4 into this being, I guess, Phase 5 now, I do think it is one of the better offerings because it feels very inconsequential within the grander MCU. It's more concerned with its own identity as opposed to the trajectory of Phase 4 or Phase 5. It prioritizes itself as an emotional journey, as you were talking about. The movie is simply about trying to save one of your closest friends. That's basically the plot synopsis. I saw a review for this film. I forget who wrote it, but the headline said the movie is about trying to find your friend some healthcare. And that's kind of accurate. I mean, it's in a very like jokey kind of tongue in cheek.
Right in time for the writer's strike.
Right in time. You know what I mean? Yeah, maybe critics should be writing movies nowadays.
I know, right?
But I do like the simplicity of the film. I think really where my biggest problems come into it are some of the things that we were talking about. You know, Gunn being fired from production, being brought back. He worked on another film in the middle of all of this. And of course, having to contend with plot threads that Gunn clearly didn't want to have to deal with, like Gamora in Endgame and stuff. And for the record, I actually didn't mind the way Gamora was integrated here. I kind of like the whole will they, won't they joke going.
Yeah, I just feel like it's... He has to tap into stuff that was like clearly from the first film.
You could tell it wasn't what he wanted to do, but I kind of like how he played with it in a way where it's like he reoccurred the same will they, won't they joke, but I think he crystallized it pretty well. I think where that relationship ends, I'll simply say, is the right move. I think it does a good job there. But given all of those circumstances, the film is kind of a mess. I do think it is a pretty uneven film. And you can kind of feel that there is a sense of compromise here and a lot of maneuvering threads that some really work, some don't always work. Actually, a lot of the stuff involving the High Evolutionary really worked for me. And you know, as a villain, the High Evolutionary, and I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation of the actor's name. Please forgive me. Chukwudi Iwuji. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Please forgive me, but he's quite great in the film, and the character is very underwritten. Like, he's kind of a one-dimensional baddie, but there is something kind of refreshing of just having a villain who is just evil for evil's sake. Mm-hmm. And it gives the actor a lot of room to play with. So I really like the performance there. And despite that thread really working, there are other aspects like involving Adam Warlock, for instance, which feel kind of, it feels kind of like a forced in, forgotten thread, honestly.
It feels like the idea that he set up at the end of the last one, and then he's like, oh yeah, that's right, I set that up. Oh, okay.
That felt like James Gunn kind of dropping the ball on that setup a little bit.
Or honestly, it's kind of smart to just be like, oh, they want me to like maybe like make Adam Warlock like a thing maybe for down the road. What if they just made him like a big giant idiot?
It's just an introduction, because I feel like we can say the same thing about someone like Wanda Maximoff when we first saw her in Age of Ultron, right? Yeah. Now she has become one of the greatest characters in the MCU. But at that point, you might say in a vacuum within Age of Ultron, well, maybe we would have liked to see a little more from her, right? The same can be said about, let's say, I don't know, I'll hypothesize here, America Chavez from Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness. In that movie, no, not a very interesting character, very underwritten, but maybe we'll see more of that character that'll help fix those issues, right?
I mean, Brendan, the perfect example of this too is also, I mean, the first Doctor Strange is very hit or miss for people, but I would argue Stephen Strange over his in-game and Infinity War stuff. And I like Multiverse of Madness a little bit more than
I'm
you did.
I'm liking it more as time goes on. I still don't love it. I still think that one is too compromised, and I would have loved to see more of the Raimi-isms there.
But Strange as a character has become more complex and fascinating. He's one of the, I think, remaining sort of leaders left in the MCU. But in that first outing, you're like, what the hell are they going to do with this character? And now they're like, I would say he is one of the best things about that Infinity War Endgame.
I agree.
Two-parter. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree.
Him and Ant-Man. You know, surprisingly.
Actually, yeah. Oh, well, Infinity War, I would say, I mean, it's really more of a Thanos movie. And I mean, I wish it was even more of a Thanos movie. But the two things about Infinity War I love the most are Thanos and Thor. I think that's Chris Hemsworth's best performance in the entire MCU is from Infinity War. Yeah. We're getting a little sidetracked here. I want to get back to Guardians Volume 3.
No, it's okay. But you get,
right,
but
it's not really a rabbit hole. At least we're still within the MCU.
No, it proves the point that, like, just because you get introduced to a character like early on does not mean that that character
is going to remain
something better down the road. Yeah, you know what I mean? And honestly, like, to have him in here it kind of makes sense. And also, it's contained within, once again, this Guardian story, right, Brendan? Because sure. we were introduced in Volume 2,
sure.
sort of not having... I'm glad we didn't have, like, Warlock do, like, his own thing or have a Disney Plus show. He just kind of gets put in here. Gunn gets to use him the way he wants to. Sort of as, like, a, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, he's like a side villain or whatever, or anti-hero, or however you want to use it. But
right.
It's a big dumb point as well. But, you know, you know, I didn't have a problem with it nearly as much as people have. I'm not saying you had a problem with it or anything, mm-hmm. but like, you know, some people have been like a little disappointed. I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine with it. He'll be all right.
He might be
like,
right.
I'm not worried about it. You know what I mean?
But it still kind of proves the point that the movie itself is kind of uneven. And I do think there is circumstances behind the scenes that led to the making of it and everything we've talked about there that it certainly wouldn't have made Gunn's job any easier. Right. And you could kind of sense that. I do think it is the worst of the three Guardians films. The biggest thing I'm torn on, and you alluded to this, and then I'll toss it back to you, is I am not sure how I feel about the handling of Rocket in this movie. And I think it's less about, because we've talked about this, or many people have talked about this, it's pretty gratuitous. I mean, the term animal torture has been thrown around a lot, and that's not too far off of a description. It's pretty hard to watch at times. That's not the problem I have. I think the problem I have is really more of the narrative flow of it and the overall integration of how it's told, because the Rocket that we know and love from Volume 1, Volume 2, as well as the times that we saw him in Infinity War and Endgame, that Rocket is unconscious for like 90% of this movie. and so then when we keep going back to Rocket's backstory, it's an underdeveloped version of that character that I feel like we haven't gotten to know yet. So I think the way it's told, the flashback nature being as sporadic as it is, it made it hard for me to connect to this prior version of Rocket and his animal friends in those flashbacks that to me, it started to feel like just an exploitation of the Bambi effect. And I feel like, I'm not saying this is why people are reacting so emotionally to Rocket's story here. But in the case of me, I found myself feeling moved and saddened by Rocket's backstory simply because I saw the animals as cute. And I don't think that works. And this is really the element that is holding me back from loving this movie. If I can come around on this, and maybe I will, because history has shown that I've come around on a previous Guardians movie before, that will be the saving grace for me if I come around on Rocket's story and I'm able to sense that synergy between the Rocket we already know and how that connects to the Rocket that was before Rocket. You know what I mean? So I think there's a disconnect there in how it's told. I almost feel like it should have been its own separate, like, prologue that all worked connectedly into this story, and I think that's what this kind of needed. But maybe I'll come around to it. So it keeps me from loving the film, but it's nice to see a movie in the MCU nowadays that at least wears its heart and sincerity more on its sleeve than a lot of these others. So I'll take the messiness of this one over some of the more corporately mandated ones. Like I mentioned being a defender of Quantumania, but I like this movie more than Quantumania. I mean, easily. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'll take something like this over that, even if it doesn't maybe flow as consistently. But I prefer movies that at least take a chance like this.
So I think that when I say that they let like James Gunn just kind of cook and do whatever he wants here, I think that the Rocket stuff is exactly a pinpoint, you know, sort of exact beacon of where they are letting him just do whatever he wants.
Well, you could tell Rocket's his favorite character, right? In fact, I think he has said that in interviews.
I think that it's been clear from the beginning.
Perhaps. Honestly. Actually, yeah, you know, good point. Yeah. just go back to Volume 1. Yeah, that is, that's pretty obvious.
I think
you're right.
He emotionally has been the most complex character overall. In the three films. I think that the one thing that you want to say, if you want to call these self-contained, you can, but I think that the, you know, Gunn's talked about, you know, obviously the stuff that like he had to work against because of Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of Infinity War and Endgame was Rocket. And
yeah.
was
yeah.
Rocket's maturity and his sense of loss and his sense yeah. of his sense of longing to have his family back and his desperacy to try to get the Guardians back because he's, you know, that's his family.
Yeah.
You know, he hadn't yeah. had a family since the events of what we see here. And I think that they have teased this enough
mm-hmm.
that I think that Gunn was going to tell this story one way or another. Now, I think that I agree with you, Brendan. I think that splice back and forth through the film and kind of losing the momentum of the sort of chase sequence yeah. or the quest sequence of a Guardians film, mm-hmm. right? And going back and forth, it is a bit of a, it at times it can be a little jarring to go back and forth and you lose a little bit of momentum because
yeah.
it's weird to have like Peter Quill and the Guardians trying to save his life and having all these quippy jokes and all the, and the stuff we love about the Guardians. Right.
Yeah.
And then going back to like this mood piece, you know, that's over here.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if putting it all at the beginning, maybe is the right move either because of the fact that like, that's like we almost have like 30 minutes of footage. It feels like here, so it would
I don't
be,
think it's that much actually. Like
it
I
feels mean, like it, a lot.
It feels like well, but then again, I feel like that's
it's the, spread out. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's the illusion of movie making and narrative storytelling yeah. like that. That when you bring it, it's like when you notice someone like okay, you notice someone like Anthony Hopkins only having what 10 or 11 minutes of screen time in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
but it seems like out, so much yeah. more because it's so spread out, right?
No, that's true. But I think that. You know, to get to some of the like emotional moments in the film, particularly what happens with Rocket towards the end, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, I don't know how you would redo it. I'm not James Gunn and I'm not going to try to do that, but,
yeah.
but, and I think that that's kind of like a futile exercise because what we got was what we got and we can't go back.
Right.
And
we can't go back and change it. You're right.
I can't go back and change it. And I know that some fans, you know, honestly, probably wouldn't. And mm-hmm. what we got here, though, I think substance-wise, regardless of how it was put together, substance-wise, Brendan, is I agree. It's very hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Very uneasy. I mean I don't think he's trying to make like cute animals and then trying to like. You know, screw him up or whatever. I think it's
no.
I think
he's certainly not. He's not condoning this kind of stuff. He's not condoning animal cruelty.
He's speaking to a larger theme of that nothing's perfect. You know what I mean? And it's in the imperfections is where you find humanity.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And he's talked about this. I think in the Guardians films, I think that that's where like ego. You know, Kurt Russell's character from the last film also
yeah.
kind of ties into this as well. I think also yeah. too, Ronan ties into this as well. And I yeah. think all these villains are kind of tying in perfectly together to this theme. And it all ties back to his favorite character, which is Rocket, which is essentially something that is perfectly innocent and perfectly fine and has an end date and has sort of an expiration date or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't need to be made to the perfect essence, but if you destroy the innocence, it can become a cold and sort of cynical world. And we see it in the film too, is that like in order to make this paradise, there is imperfections, and that's what the
uh-huh.
the what is the character's name again?
The high evolutionary, the
high evolutionary. Sorry, it's,
yeah. Well, oh, yeah, and his whole counter earth, as it's called.
Yes, it's you see the crumbling of it when they arrive on his planet of like. You see the suburbia, but then there's the you know the inner city drug trafficking, and then there's the poverty, and then there's yeah. all these other things. And his solution is, well, let's just destroy the planet and go to the next thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And it's like no, like nothing is perfect, you know. And so, you know, using all these levels up and up and up and up, and also to kind of talking about you know animal testing,
yeah,
and all these different things. that Gunn is trying to talk here, it's not going to be a pretty sight. Mm-hmm. It like this stuff is not a pretty sight. To me, this is probably one of the more like political films. It was funny. Like it's preaching a message here. You know what I mean? A little bit. It's doing it with probably like the most famous character also too. Like I understand a little bit why probably Rocket isn't used as much here, because a certain actor that's playing him is potentially directing his own second feature. It probably didn't have a lot of time to get into the booth or whatever, but
maybe, yeah.
And they had to use a couple of other younger actors to play Rocket. So I get why wink, wink, they had to kind of go down this route a little bit too. But I also think too, is that the lingering question for the Guardians has always been Rocket's sort of angry,
there
exterior,
two stories that these movies were always alluding to. One was Rocket's backstory, the other was Peter Quill's father, right?
Yeah. And they answered one in the last, yeah, and then yeah, they were going to answer it this way. Now I will agree with you a little bit that I thought that the conclusion of that sort of backstory was just so like of course, like that's exactly how that ends for him to go. And it's the really,
well, that's
the only...
exactly how James Gunn normally ends moments like that. Right. That yeah, was a very James Gunn narrative choice.
Yeah. And that's also like just the choice of like a lot of superhero or a lot of movies to just go down that route. It's very easy. Mm-hmm. And everything. But I thought there's a sequence of this movie too. I thought back of a movie entirely out of this entire franchise. And I thought of, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part Two, where that was sort of ripped right out of.
Interesting.
And because it literally looks like the exact same place, in that film where that sequence happens in this one. I was like, okay, I know where we're going with this, and it's almost beat for beat that. But I think that while that's going on. And I think that while I make that joke, though, there is a lot of really sincereness. And that's where I think the emotionality got me, Brendan, where I was watching that scene and you have like these characters that you've been sort of spliced through and you don't think that and you don't think that you're getting attached to them. And then it's just opposing back to Quill and the Guardians on the ship trying to save Rocket. And I thought that moment where it was cut back and forth, I was like, okay, this is where I understand why they wanted to do it. It's at probably its peak emotionally speaking towards, I think, also the end, like one of the final climactic battle sequences too.
Yeah.
I thought it weirdly worked for me.
Okay.
I think that if you're just speaking character wise and emotionality,
mm-hmm,
you know, without getting really into spoilers, it's essentially you're losing one family to go back to another. And mm-hmm, I thought Gunn, while I agree with you, it's a little bit of a bumpy ride to get there. I thought when you get to that moment, I'm like, oh wow.
Yeah.
He connected a thread there that I didn't think about, but wow, yeah, that's actually very poignant.
First off, you make a great point about how some of these other movies in this quote-unquote trilogy do inadvertently maybe connect back to Rocket in some ways. I think that's a pretty interesting observation. And then you talk about the way that it's, or his backstory is told and how it unfolds in the confines of this movie, specifically Volume 3 here. And I think that's where I'm still struggling a little bit, because I guess I was hoping to, and maybe this is where a rewatch will help me, right? I was hoping to sense a little bit more of, okay, so if we're going to make a specific flashback at this particular moment, how does that parallel something that's happening in the present at that specific moment? And then doing it again and, you know, continuing that kind of trajectory. Well, I wasn't sure if I was sensing that.
Yeah, I think that that's just mostly coming down to the fact that the clock is ticking. You know, I think it's more of a clock metaphor, yeah, I think, of anything.
Which is interesting because it didn't add much urgency to me.
It doesn't, but I think that's what he's kind of going for. I agree with you. It's not like it's not the choice I would have made to do that. But I think that by the end, you do feel that urgency. You know, that's what I'm saying.
I do a little bit. I think a lot of the other characters are helping to provide additional emotionality there too. Like, we haven't really talked much about the rest of the returning cast here. I'll just single two people out specifically. But Dave Bautista is fantastic here. Karen Gillan as Nebula, I think, is also, and then of course, Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, Star-Lord. I actually think he's very good here too. So if there is any lingering emotionality by the end, especially involving Rocket, it's how we believe that these other characters care for this other creature, right? And I think that's what helps sells it too. I just couldn't help but sit there and think, man, if we got a full prologue of Rocket's backstory like that, and then that hard, like, that devastation hard cuts to the opening credits of him singing to Radiohead's Creep would have been the best transition I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe has ever given us. We'll talk about the soundtrack in a little bit, but I do like the sense of melancholy that the opening credits provide. It really cues us in that this is going to be a very different movie. And I think it could have hit even harder if James Gunn maybe just took the chance, or if Disney let him take the chance to say, let's just devastate these people, and then we devastate them even further with Tom York's crooning.
Well, I think also too, though, Brendan, you would have had that like at the front.
Yeah.
And then you would have had those sequences with Rocket, you know, where he gets to that sort of state.
Yeah.
And then, there would have been an entire chunk of that movie where he's gone.
But I think at least we would have, had a sense of Rocket's presence in this movie more by having a full, narrative thread in the beginning. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just, I don't know. We haven't seen that movie. I'm just speculating.
Yeah, so
if we ever tested it and we ever made like an in-session cut of the film and doing that, maybe it might look like crap. It might be terrible.
Maybe it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Narratively speaking, how do you, sure. James Gunn is, he's really, When you think about the needle drop, you mentioned that, like, to start it off with Creep, I was like, all right.
And it's an acoustic version of Creep. It's not even the full version of it.
No, I was like, all right.
I mean, even when the title of the movie appears, it doesn't even, like the song Creep has, it's not one of my favorite Radiohead songs. I'm not a big fan of it personally,
it's not the best one, but I understand why to use it. Actually, use it here was actually really smart.
Well, I love the rendition of it too, that it's just Tom York and an acoustic guitar. The entire band is stripped back. So the song is very much known for this crescendo.
Glad that made the iPod.
Yeah. It's known for this crescendo that it reaches at the end of the song, right? The full band coming in and really turning into a hard rock kind of environment. But all of that's gone. And when the title appears, it's just Tom York and an acoustic guitar screaming that lyric. It's really strange. It's almost anticlimactic, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that. I think it's a really interesting tonal subversion.
Yeah, I wish, I think some of the needle drops work in the film like that. I think some of them don't.
It's not the best soundtrack of the three. I'll say that.
No, it's the weakest soundtrack out of the three. I would honestly like Volume 2 soundtrack.
That's my favorite soundtrack of the three. I mean,
Volume 2 is just my favorite of the three. I do like this movie. I think because of the emotional stakes a little bit more than one. I'm still not a big fan of Volume 1. As many people are.
That's interesting. So you like this one more than Volume 1 as a movie?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like, I got this at like 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd. And I'm the one defending it. I think you have it at like 3.
So I have it at 3.
The half star really made a difference.
The half star does. It kind of does when you're in the 3 to 3.5 range, right? That's kind of the biggest separator between. Well, actually, really, the biggest separator is when you get to 2.5 out of 5, right? Because then you have to start deciphering if it's a. If it's a quote unquote positive or negative review, right?
Yeah. Because I think I like all the Rocket stuff here. I think it's great. I think that, the Adam Warlock and Elizabeth Debicki sort of stuff, I think that's very undercooked.
Agreed.
And I think that, and again, that's just, I think that I think that that's undercooked, but then the high evolutionary stuff's actually pretty good.
Yep.
But then, you know, I think that the Gamora stuff, obviously, is working up against a hill.
Yeah.
And it doesn't all the way click until towards the end for me. I think like most
the resolution of that, I think, is very good. I'll say that
it's very good. But like also it's a little bit like, like we're like, you know,
kind of spinning wheels like, there. And
yeah, yeah, spinning wheels to get there. And feels like we've done this before with this group and we kind of have. But I agree with you. I think like Karen Gillan's great. I think.
Yeah.
Batista's just great.
I have to do so. A little inside baseball as we're recording this. Yeah. JD just texted me as we're doing this right now, and he said we are required to say this one quote on this review, and it's involving the character of Drax. And it is one of the best lines in the movie. And it's you weren't made to be a destroyer. You were meant to be a dad.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Gosh.
I bet JD was like dead in the theater next to Sam.
Well, I think JD loved this movie. He tweeted that he cried quite a bit. So yeah, it sounds like he might be the highest of even the three of us on this one.
No,
so,
I was sitting there. I was like, God, that's how you understand your characters. And
Drax's resolution here is my favorite part of the ending. There are two moments of the ending that did bring me to tears. And it's the one involving Drax. And the one involving Peter Quill. I'll simply say that. I think the way that resolves itself, I think, was a nice tie into the first movie, I'll simply say. And I do think Chris Pratt handles it pretty well. There's like a sense of almost like insecurity in him because he's very much a fish out of water once again in a place where he shouldn't be. So there's a lot of interesting irony there.
Yeah, I thought Mario was really good in the movie too.
I still didn't see the Mario movie yet.
I still haven't, and I
have not contributed to its $1 billion raise.
I'm not. Yeah, I don't need to contribute. It's fine.
I'm kind of curious to see it though.
I am. I know. I know some people that are still going to see it this week, and I'm like, really? That's what you're going to see? Anyway.
Wow. Yeah.
I want to shout out someone, and I thought that was actually really good too here, and that's Pong Kilateef. I'm probably
and that's another name we can't pronounce.
By the way, also it's Daniela Melancor is from the Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
wanted to get back to that. We got deep dived into that. So if you're looking for that excerpt, folks, it comes at the 47 minute mark of this show. but
we kept our promise. We kept our promise.
Honestly, for like a character that, you know, kind of got thrown in the second Guardians, and I guess it's I never watched the holiday special for Guardians, to be fair, but
interesting.
Heard her and Drax had a lot more to do in there and builds up their rapport a lot more. But I thought she was great in this. It was really interesting that like this was the first kind of mention that she's like Quill's half sister, and
was a huge revelation in the holiday special. That was like, I mean, in many ways, like the holiday special was it felt like a two purpose exercise. The first purpose just to be a fun little holiday special and throw Kevin Bacon into the mix, and the second thing was to reveal that Mantis is Peter Quill's half sister.
I mean, like, I didn't watch it, but I kind of got it because like Ego's essentially created her. I got that, but at the same token, I'm like, Brendan, this is my problem with the MCU, and you know it, is that if somebody misses one little thing, then you're like, I was in the theater, I was like,
I'm willing, you know, to your point though, Ryan, I'm willing to argue that the holiday special still remains relatively inconsequential when compared to the rest of these movies. And that's primarily because you just said it. It's kind of easy to decipher that Mantis is Peter Quill's half sister because of her origins. So,
but I'm also a 31-year-old that's seen all the damn films.
You're also smart enough to not have things completely mentioned to you in order to get it. Because holiday special, it's like a direct conversation like, oh, you are my half sister. It is so literal in that regard.
Put it in quotes. You know what I mean? I get that. And like, but like, I was sitting here and going like, honestly, until the other day when I saw it, I forgot about it. forgot about this.
Actually weird for a big development like that in the holiday special. It's just kind of brushed over here.
Yeah, it's like, and I was like, what the hell? You know what I mean? Yeah. I was sitting in the middle of this movie. I'm like, oh, I guess they must have, like, yeah, I guess they're just going to, he's just going to write that in. And that was one of the, I honestly figured that it was like, well, he really wanted them to kind of hit on this maybe in Infinity War, and they didn't really do that. So he added it here. I was like, all right, okay, cool.
I guess
we're doing that. Yeah. But I thought she was really good. Yeah.
She is good.
Karen Gillan, great.
Yeah. Here really as well. Great. Yeah.
Honestly, Cooper is really good. Like, I mean, like,
yeah, he's good.
Is it crazy that we kind of just forget that Bradley Cooper is Rocket Raccoon? Is it I feel like of all the characters in the MCU, all the stars, all the people that play their characters, and maybe it's just because we don't see him, but we forget that this man has been playing a raccoon for 10 years.
And it's the voice, right? It's the way he manipulates his voice, which is, that could have been easy to do in post-production, but you go back to the making of the first Guardians of the Galaxy and you look at like Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper in the recording booth. And the way Bradley Cooper is throwing his voice to sound like Rocket, it's mostly all him. And,
And Vin's like, I'm Groot. All right.
Yeah. In every single language.
I got to go to the fast set. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, I agree. Cause like but honestly, you can tell that that's Vin Diesel's voice.
Oh, you can. That's kind of the point.
Like, that's the kind of the point. Yeah. But it's like, I was watching something on YouTube, and he was there at the LA premiere or whatever. And I was like, is that the first time he's actually gone to one of those things? Like, I don't think I've ever seen him go to one of these Marvel things. And it makes sense because like the character is sort of having like a big send off here or a big moment.
Yeah.
It's very focused on him. He's actually in a lot of ways, the main character. On camera and off camera. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a Rocket movie in that regard.
Yeah, it's gone away from being Quill's story in the first two to definitely being about Rocket.
Yeah.
Even though I think they kind of share it in the second film a little bit. But anyway,
they do.
I was just like, oh my god, here's Bradley Cooper, director of A Star Is Born, billion time Oscar nominee, never won anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's Maestro himself, and like he's literally just like, yeah, I'm here to like celebrate James Gunn and Rocket, and I kind of always forget that he's a part of this.
Yeah,
and so but yeah, I think you're right about Chris Pratt. I know I joke with him, but he actually, you know, I know. Personal speaking aside from personal life,
yeah,
if we're talking about Chris Pratt as Star-Lord or working with good talent, he's actually a very, very solid actor. Agreed. I wouldn't say great or good.
I think he can be great.
I think he has the potential because he's really good here.
I think he's, you know, I think he's great in volume two. I know it's a vocal
character perfectly.
Yeah. It's a vocal performance in something like this, but I also think he's great in the Lego movie, for instance.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's good in the Jurassic movies at all.
No, because there's no good directors or a good screenplay in sight with those
movies. Which is so unfortunate because they had a good director for the second one and it was very much compromised.
Yeah, because of, you know, Book of Henry.
Yeah. Right in the screen. Yeah. I don't hate Book of Henry. I don't hate it.
I know you don't. Evidently, Disney did enough to not give him a Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't want to talk about that.
I know, but no, I think that this, I think it's a good movie. Honestly, Brendan, it's nice to see emotional payoffs. It's nice to see good action sequences. I will say clear action sequences. I thought that the visual effects in this movie were a heck of a lot better than a lot of the previous Marvel entries.
Yeah.
Including Ant-Man.
Quantumania. Like, yeah, I agree. You know, they're more inventive here. Probably my favorite set piece was the heist sequence on this What was that planet called again? But it was it was basically like a giant jellyfish, is what they were.
It was like a jellyfish sort of human thing. Yeah, yeah, it was pretty good.
And I think maybe part of it, and I'm going back to the soundtrack for a brief moment. And while I said this is my least favorite of the soundtracks for all three of them, there are at least three needle drops that really worked for me. And one of them is playing Space Hogs in the meantime as they land on this planet to perform this heist. I thought that really worked, and maybe it's just because I love the song. But I thought, as far as set pieces go, that was my favorite one.
Yeah, that was a good set piece. I thought that the Groot Star-Lord escape plan sort of sequence.
Yeah,
that gunfight here. I actually thought that was really fun and really funny. And
that also, was a good pull of the rug. Yeah, I'm with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and I just love the way that he like put different people together in this film and different sections of the Guardians together and allowed a lot. I think that at times the movie is really funny. I think it's really moving. I think that overall it's just like a really fun time, and I've missed that in the MCU. I'm glad to see it back, if only for a short amount of time, Brendan, because I don't think that this is going to be a recurring theme going forward, because the Guardians are an original, you know, phase two entity that were created. They are the inventors of the weird. We don't get Doctor Strange. We don't get Shang-Chi. We don't get Miss Marvel. We don't get all these things if Guardians aren't a hit and don't work. And going forward, it's going to be a real shame not to see Gunn sort of helming behind the camera and working with these characters again. But it's going to be a really interesting seeing where they go forward with these characters. I know that everyone's talking about like this being an ending for the Guardians as we know. I don't buy any of that.
I don't buy it either. It's more of an ending for James Gunn's Guardians.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's
an ending for him.
Yeah.
As the shepherd of these characters. But
yeah. Now, granted, that doesn't mean that there is not a sense of closure and finality regarding this group of
story is closed.
Yeah. And the Guardians will return and continue for sure, but without getting into spoilers, I'll say this. It won't be the same. That's at least – there's going to be a difference between the Guardians going forward as opposed to the Guardians we saw in this James Gunn trilogy.
I don't know. I think give it a Kang Dynasty or a Secret Wars in the future and they'll all be – you know how like Thor appears in Infinity War, or like there's the big portal sequence in Endgame? They'll all come right back together, right, and run on the battlefield together, and you'll be like, of course.
And they'll hug and sing Kumbaya.
Yeah, and everybody will scream, and you'll be like, hey, can you keep it down? I'm trying to watch that movie here.
We know Marvel is all about creating those audience reactions, right? That's what they
literally put audible pauses in their movies.
They do. You're right. You're not wrong.
Hate that.
Well, especially if you see it in a
Spider-Man was the worst.
Well, especially when you see it in a setting where like let's say you go at a time that's very awkward and there's maybe only like four or five people in the theater, and it's you could sense the breath being taken way too long.
When you're just watching them at home by yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just take it there. Like watch Spider-Man No Way Home at home.
Yeah, right. I will say, as far as those pauses you're talking about, Endgame did it well because you had Alan Silvestri's awesome score filling in those gaps.
Yeah, score can help that. That's something you might want to include. But no, I know we'll probably talk about this more on the main show, but I am fascinated. And I know we talked about this a little bit before with the state of the MCU, and it's really funny how a lot of what I said was. It's kind of seeming to be coming true.
Yeah.
Maybe Marvel should hire me. But
look at you, this forecast.
Not saying they are. So if you're on YouTube and you think I'm being bought by Marvel, You freaking wish. No. Because then I wouldn't have a mortgage.
They have that kind of money, but they're not willing to spend that kind of money.
Yeah, they're not. They don't want it that bad.
No.
But no, I think that it's, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good, fun effort. Good way to kick off the summer.
Yeah, I'm more or less with you, and I'm willing to give this film another chance. I don't know if I'll see it again in the theater. I'll probably wait until it's available on Disney Plus to see if it holds up for me even better on rewatches, because I wouldn't be surprised if it does. Volume 2 was the same thing with me, and maybe I'll see some threads and nuances that I missed on that first go-around with regard to the storytelling and how Rocket's backstory is interwoven, as we were talking about. But yeah, I do like the existence of this one and how it does wear its heart more on its sleeve than others. And you could tell that James Gunn cares, and that's a good thing, and hopefully we see more of that going forward. Great conversation here on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. If you want to see some more thoughts from us, we'll eventually have some thoughts on our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. You can also let us know your thoughts by emailing us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. We really do appreciate it. That'll do it for this review here, Ryan. Thanks for joining me this morning. It didn't sound like our voices got very bassy. We actually got pretty...
Get real low.
All of a sudden, it sounds like you're singing a club singing that anthem Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I'm going to start singing that Vin Diesel song. You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever heard that?
I don't know if I have.
You haven't heard Vin Diesel sing that pop song that came out?
I don't know. I don't really
feel like this, and he's talking like you.
I don't really follow Vin Diesel that much.
I gotta tell you, it's a bop.
Okay, well, you know, I like a good bop. I'm gonna send it to
you.
Okay,
if you wanna go out there, hang on. We're not ending this review until I find the song so everybody can go listen to it.
So okay. I guess I'll just keep the momentum going so there's no awkward gaps like there were in No Way Home, like you were saying.
Feel like I do. It's with it's Vin Diesel singing a song. The song came out, I kid you not. Oh shoot, I don't want to play it.
No, don't play it.
The song came out in The Suspense Is Killing Everyone during the pandemic, and it is a bop. So Feel Like I Do. It's everything you think it will be. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome.
Okay. You know what I mean? All right.
Because it's literally like if he was just talking into a mic, and mm-hmm. it's great.
Yeah. Well, here we are assigning homework on the In Session Film podcast.
I'm saying it's from one family to the next family, because we'll be talking about Vin Diesel in 2 weeks.
Oh, so. Gosh. Yeah. Yeah. He loves his family. He loves his family. He loves his family. Family's good. Family's good. But yes, great conversation here, Ryan. Really do appreciate you taking some time this morning to talk about some Guardians Volume 3. A few plugs here before we get out of here. We talked about episode 533 also coming out around this same time. Ryan and I will be reconvening to talk a bit more about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It'll be a very loose conversation, not as structured as some of our other episodes, or at least our episodic main shows specifically. But we'll be giving an updated ranking of the MCU, maybe not the entire MCU, but just like maybe a top 10, maybe into the top 20, and see where we disagree the most and have a fun conversation there. And maybe crystallize the whole show by speculating a little bit of what we expect to see with Phase 5 and maybe into Phase 6. So be on the lookout for that in episode 533. And if you haven't already listened to episode 532, all four of us, you, me, Ryan, and then Jay and JD, all got together to do a collective ranking of the Walt Disney Animated Studios' Golden and Silver eras.
Yeah.
And if you watch that on YouTube, you'll see some physical violence happen when we talk about Sleeping Beauty.
that was wild. And then also you'll see someone's heartbreak in The Sword and the Stone.
If you want to hear why we're referring to it like that, you can go and check out episode 532. It was a lot of fun. Ryan, thanks for joining me on this Guardians-filled escapade. Really do appreciate it. And for everyone listening, we will see you all next time on the In Session Film Podcast.
Feel Like I Do. Vin Diesel, listen to it.
I'm hooked on a feeling.
Ah, The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.